acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 43, Imperial Girl. Thursday, June 26, 2014. I'm your host, Sarah, podcasting from Yinhu Chaoyuan, Silver Lake Tea House. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yinhu podcast has a Facebook page. It's available on iTunes. And photographs and show notes can be found on yarnsatyinhu.com. Today's episode includes the following segments: the back porch, the front porch, ever-expanding skill set, and off the shelf. The school year is finally over. At the school district where I teach in New Jersey, we have a very long school year because we don't start until after Labor Day. We have a lot of holidays and breaks. This year, we used all 5 snow days that we were allotted in the schedule. And we just have a lot of teaching and learning and testing to do. So our school year takes quite a long time. I feel like we're always one of the last school districts in the country to let out. But it was a glorious first day with no school and no teaching to do. And I spent most of it on my porch, working on some projects, sipping some iced coffee, listening to music, and watching some of the goings-on in the woods and down by the creek. For about an hour or an hour and a half, there was a pileated woodpecker who was working on a really big hollow log or hollow tree, because the sound was almost like a drum or like someone drumming on woodblock instrument, and it echoed off the both sides of the creek, and it just echoed all around. It was really extraordinary, and it kept happening several times a minute for well over an hour. So that was a nice introduction to summer. It's a very bittersweet time of year at the end of the school year when you need to say goodbye to graduating seniors who have over the years become some of your favorite students and often beloved friends. That was certainly the case for one young lady. And in recent months, we've been talking more and more about our knitting, in addition to all of the other things that she has been doing academically. And she has become a listener to the show, and she's also become a fan of a number of video podcasts. And the last time we spoke, she said that The Fat Squirrel Speaks is quickly becoming one of her favorites. So I'd like to give a special welcome to the Yarns at Yin Hu group to Anonymous 47. And I hope that through the podcast and through social media, we can stay in contact. And I'm certainly interested in all the things that you might be knitting while you're away at college. The back porch. This past week, I completed a shawl designed by Helen Stewart. The shawl is called Fireflies Rising, and it is truly a lovely shawl design. I took it around to visit a few people when I was saying farewell at school, and I have a few colleagues who are always interested in my knitting, so they see photographs of it on social media, but sometimes I try to bring things in to show them in person. And I was really proud of the knitting I did on this shawl, so I brought it in. They were speechless. They said it was just so beautiful. It was stunning. The design is really something special and not incredibly complicated or difficult. So I think with this design, Helen Stewart really maximized the elegance and intensity with minimal effort and complicated stitch patterns on the part of the knitter. I was particularly pleased with the yarn choice that I made for this shawl, and unfortunately, the color has not photographed very well. It either looks too orange or too green. In fact, it's a highly tonal color, which is reminiscent for me of fireflies and evening light. It's very golden. There are some browns, a little bit of brassiness. It's just a really lovely high twist yarn. The yarn is from Pagewood Farm. It's Glacier Bay in the camo colorway. It's a 3-ply yarn. It's incredibly tightly twisted and it's very round, so the stitches really stand out and there's nice stitch definition. I used needle sizes US 5 and 6 as called for by the pattern. I followed the directions very carefully because I was trying to avoid that little bump that you sometimes get when you begin a crescent-shaped shawl. I would like to learn more about why that sometimes happens and why it happens with crescent-shaped shawls and not other kinds of shawls. So I think that using a smaller needle to start off was helpful, and then I certainly kept a close eye on that when I was blocking the shawl and just tried to get a nice straight edge across the back. And there are yarn overs, so that helps you get a little more stretch to the pattern. I mentioned in the previous episode that I was very interested in adding beads to this shawl. On my project page, I am very specific about how and where I added beads to this shawl. I was very concerned about adding too many beads and it looking like, wow, it's a shawl with beads on it. I wanted it to be quite subtle. It is, in fact, incredibly subtle, and I think I could have added a great number more beads without making the shawl look tacky or looking like it was overkill with the beads. And I think that even though I added 2 beads at a time, I avoided the literal interpretation that I was concerned about last time. I think this shawl would be a lovely gift for ladies of a wide array of ranges. I think you can wear it more traditionally, kind of draped over your shoulders. But if that way of wearing a shawl seems a little bit old ladyish to you, I think this shawl is narrow enough to wrap around your neck more like a scarf, and or you can put the widest part in the front like a bib and wrap the ends back around, and it looks really stylish and fun. It's lace, but it's not fussy lace. And I highly recommend this pattern by Helen Stewart. It is called Fireflies Rising, and it is available for purchase on Ravelry. The front porch. This week at Yinhu, Christmas knitting officially began. I am really hoping to use the stash dash and summer knitting time to complete Christmas gifts for my mom and both of my sisters, and smaller things for a number of other family members and friends. For my mom and my sisters, I have selected a pattern for each of them that employs some of my hand spun and some other purchased yarn. I'm not sure how much I will say about each of these patterns on the show, But in general, they do not follow me on Instagram, so I can provide more details there, and certainly it will be clear on my Ravelry page what I am knitting and for whom. I'm pretty excited that some of the smaller patterns I have picked out involve felting, and Samuel said that if I did the knitting, he would take care of the felting. So I'm really excited to work with him on some fiber arts projects and collaborate and see what we can come up with. I tend to be more of a follow the directions, do it by the book sort of person. And Samuel is always much more experimental and innovative when he works on making something. So even though that can cause a little bit of tension, overall, it's a really good collaboration when we work on making something, and particularly when we work on gifts. We have a pretty good track record of working on some handmade gifts together. And that will be, I think, a highlight of the summer, working with him on some projects to give away during the holidays. I hope that the upcoming Asymmetrical is on your front porch. This is a craft along that will begin on August 1st. There's a planning thread open now on the Yarns at Yinhu Ravelry discussion board with a chance to win some patterns by Simone Eich of Wolverick Designs. They are asymmetrical knitting designs. You do not need to knit a Wolverick design to participate in the Asymmetrical, and all kinds of crafts are open: knit, crochet, weave and construct something. Sewing is also an option, and the parameters are to create something, either an accessory or a garment, that is asymmetrical in some way. That could be in design, in structure, even in use of color. If you can explain where the asymmetrical quality comes in, then you should absolutely put your finished product up on the Ravelry thread for a chance to win some really fantastic prizes. The craft along will go until near the end of September, so almost 2 full months to complete your project. The Asymmetrical is going to be a lot of fun. There are already a number of people who have expressed their intention to craft along. I hope you will consider doing that and put this on your front porch. Ever-expanding skill set. Jasmine and Gigi of the Knit More Girls podcast have been encouraging everyone to think about expressing themselves with metric measurements. Their hashtag metric revolution has been catching on. I've heard a number of other folks mentioning it on Instagram and on other podcasts, and I am ashamed because I don't think very well in metric measurements. And just growing up with imperial measurements and never being encouraged to measure anything in millimeters, I am always at a loss. And I've never really even considered metric units until I became a knitter. And it's interesting how measuring yarn in grams is much more precise than measuring yarn in ounces. If you're thinking about exactly how much yarn do I need to do this, or do I have enough yarn left to complete one last row and the bind off, a digital scale measuring in grams is certainly the way to go. I've also discovered that using a digital scale and measuring in grams is also very helpful in baking. This month for the Bulk Bins Cook Along, I have encouraged Yarns at Yinhu listeners to just, you know, use it as a wild card month. Try anything. And our discussion on the board has ranged from all different kinds of ingredients to even films and books and TV shows having to do with food. So we've really expanded our horizons this month with the Bulk Bins Cook-Along. I have used this month to investigate making pizza crust and making pizzas on our charcoal grill. Several years ago, Samuel and I purchased a charcoal grill. It's a ceramic charcoal grill called the Big Green Egg. Many people have never heard of this kind of grill. It's kind of unusual. It's based on a Japanese Komodo-style grill. And I guess the defining feature is that it can cook your food at very high heat without drying it out, because the incredibly thick ceramic of the grill traps moisture in. I love this grill. Samuel built a cedar cart for the grill, so there's a very nice counter space and storage. Our house is very small and we don't have air conditioning, so during the summer, bringing the heat of cooking outdoors is really essential. Over the holidays, we were given the gift of a pizza stone specifically for this grill and a peel. And I have not had very much experience making my own pizza dough before, but over the course of this month, I gave it a try a couple different times. And I used a book by Jim Leahy called My Bread, which is a method of letting bread dough rise over a long period of time with little yeast, not as much yeast as you would do for a rapid rise kind of a dough. And I also experimented with substituting some whole wheat flour for the bread flour called for in the recipe. It was essential to do this by weight, and I made some pizza dough using standard imperial cup measurements, and then I made the dough again using grams and measuring my ingredients on a digital scale, and using the metric measurements was definitely resulted in a better product. I also gained a little more experience in working with the dough, and I started using some cornmeal to help separate the dough from the pizza stone when I put it on the grill. I'm still working on getting a thin, crispy crust. The pizza dough that I've made so far has resulted in more of a bread-like crust. Not exactly a deep dish. It's not a doughy crust, but it's a little thicker than I would like. I would like a very thin, crisp crust and let the vegetables and produce and the flavors on top of the pizza be the thing that stands out. I will continue to post some photographs of my experiments with this, and I recommend Jim Leahy's My Bread. It was a bestseller, I think, when it came out. It's not a new book, and he has recipes for a number of different kinds of bread, as well as pizza dough, focaccia, things like that. I hope that you are considering adding local produce to your meals this summer. Joanna of Knitspin Farm is hosting an eat-along and encouraging everyone to eat local. And I was thinking about that and participating in that, of course. Who wouldn't want to participate in an eat-along? It's like the best thing ever. And I thought, well, what could I do for the Bulk Bins Cook-Along in July that would work well with this idea of eating local? So So in July, we will put quinoa in the spotlight for the entire month. And I think it's a really good choice for eating local because quinoa is a great canvas for produce, lettuce, even fruits, local meats and cheeses, and different ways of combining local flavors, and it just provides a very nutritious canvas for all of those flavors. It's also very quick cooking, so it doesn't require using a lot of pots on the stove or anything that's cooking a long time during the warm summer months. And I know that folks who listen to Yarns at Yinhu podcast have a lot of quinoa recipes up their sleeves because they've already been mentioning some of them, not only in June for the wildcard month, but also when I was struggling with amaranth in May. The Bulk Bins cook-along for quinoa will open on July 1, and I look forward to your many recipes and cooking ideas. Off the Shelf. The idea for this episode's installment of Off the Shelf came from Valerie V. D'Amelia on Ravelry, and I'm going to start by reading the message that she sent to me this past week. Valerie writes, "Hi, Sarah. I really enjoyed your podcast. It seems that no matter what your topic is, I'm always enthralled. The 25 to 30 minutes I listen pass in an instant, and I'm always left wanting more. I love the movie Chef, too. I was expecting an interesting foodie movie, but I wasn't expecting such a funny movie, so that made it extra enjoyable. I enjoyed looking at your pictures of your office and yarn stash and couldn't help but notice all of your books. I could read a few titles like The Red Tent, a book I loved, and the thought came to me that you could list your top 10 or 20 or 50 favorite books from your library. Maybe this could be a new thread as well. I keep a journal of the books I read each month, organized by the year, with a letter grade, so I can go back and see what I've read and what I've really enjoyed in the past. I like to share great books with friends and give a top best 10 books of each year in my Christmas letter. I love to hear what you've enjoyed. Thank you for your podcast, Valerie." Well, thank you, Valerie, for the compliments in the show and your careful listening and noticing the photographs that I posted on the website. I had mentioned that my yarn stash is stored in a portion of my bookshelves that I cleared out. And these bookshelves are built-in bookshelves that Samuel and I created ourselves the first year that we lived in the house together, and we did a number of renovations. I love the idea of mentioning a top 10 books of the year in a holiday letter. I think that's a fantastic idea and something that I may imitate. Sharing books and reading is one of the most important aspects of life as far as I'm concerned, and books and relationships with other readers have been some of the most enjoyable and important aspects of my own development. In looking at my bookshelves, I have discovered that there are four main categories of books on my shelves. This is by no means a library that is wide and deep in scope. I have particular reading interests and particular kinds of books that I purchase. And the other thing that I've noticed is since I have become a person engaged in the fiber arts, my reading of books, is certainly less. I think I spend as much time reading as I ever did, but maybe it's a different kind of reading. I'm certainly reading more on social media. I'm reading some publications, and I had limited my publications in the past to only one, receiving only the New Yorker by mail and nothing else. And that has changed slightly because I've subscribed to a few different magazines in the past few months. I selected 11 books from my shelves, and I will list all of these on the Yarns at Yinhu website. Right now for this segment, I'm just going to talk a little bit about the four different categories of books that I own and one selection from each of those categories that is very meaningful and a favorite for me. Probably the most well-developed aspect of my library is a collection of the classics in literature. Being many, many years an English teacher, I have read a lot of classics and I tend to keep my teaching copies. They're heavily annotated and I really enjoy looking at them. Of course, it's very difficult to pick a favorite in terms of classical literature, and I don't necessarily think this is one of the best examples of literature, but it has been a very important read for me at crucial times in my life. It's a book that I've read, I don't know, 30, 40 times all the way through, and that is Jane Austen's Persuasion. A lot of people cite Pride and Prejudice as their favorite read, but I think Persuasion offers the reader something much deeper in the way of a mature affection, not just an infatuation or a series of surprises and delights about romance. I think that the characters in Persuasion are older, not only in years, but also in experience and experience with loss. And I really enjoy the way Austen writes their story and shapes her characters. So that's one that I've gone back to again and again. Another section of my library is devoted to contemporary fiction. And I enjoy very much authors who revere classical literature and try to do something innovative with it. And one that I have enjoyed particularly in the past few years is What's Happening to Anna Kay. This novel is by Irina Reis, and she follows the sequence of plot points in Anna Karenina with a contemporary character and setting, and I think it is very well done. I don't know how enjoyable this novel would be if you are not very familiar with Anna Karenina. It's hard to say. I can't separate my enjoyment of the book from my knowledge of the original. But if you have read it and you've enjoyed Karenina, then I recommend this read. Yet another fascination of mine is thoughtful memoir by female authors. One that was hauntingly powerful is a book called Remembering the Bone House by Nancy Mares. This is a work of literary memoir, and Nancy Mares is particular in her examination of the female experience through the female body. In fact, bone house refers to one's body. She talks about being a woman and being a woman with a body who is failing her, because at the time she wrote the text, she was deep into her struggles with multiple sclerosis. So she has a very interesting stance on understanding women's relationship to their bodies. And I found her journey and her story simply fascinating. So that's Remembering the Bone House by Nancy Mares. The final area of my library is kind of a combination of poetry collections and individual works of poetry and books on writing. I amassed the majority of these books when I was pursuing a Master of Fine Arts in poetry. And I have some favorite poets, of course, and also some books about the craft of writing that have been very influential to me. The first of these is a collection of poetry by Judy Jordan called Carolina Ghost Woods. This work is so powerful, I hesitate to try to summarize or explain it, except to say that I know books of poetry intimidate a lot of people, and there are a lot of contemporary poets, in my opinion, who are maddeningly and almost deliberately obscure with their writing. And I really don't have a place in my life for that, and that's not the kind of poetry that I enjoy. Judy Jordan, in my opinion, is very accessible, and Carolina Ghost Woods has a narrative arc. So reading the poems from first to last, you do get the experience of a novel in very condensed form. There's a storyline, there is a speaker whose story you become interested in, and I think it could be a good place to start for someone who has not been very attracted to poetry in the past. A very accessible poet is one I've mentioned on the podcast before, and that is Naomi Shihab Nye. She's an incredible poet. She's also a very smart anthologist, and she's put together a number of collections of anthology with poems by others, and I can recommend all of them. One book that I'm going to recommend today is a collection of essays by Naomi Nye. It's called People and Places. Never in a Hurry, Essays on People and Places. I was very interested in the idea of space and place when I was investigating topics for my MFA. And so a lot of my reading focused on notions of place and space. Finally, a book on writing that has been incredibly powerful for me is Natalie Goldberg's Writing Down the Bones. In this very short, highly accessible work, she finds parallels between writing practice and Zen practice. And she grows as a writer as she deepens her Zen meditation practice. I think it's a book that any writer can benefit from, whether you are trying to write a novel or you're trying to get your ideas out on a blog or even getting ideas across in memos at work. I think the points that she makes are well made and have wide application across a variety of different genres. It's a quick read, great for summer, and this is a text that you don't necessarily need to read cover to cover. Well, I want to thank Valerie for this idea for a segment, and thank you for listening. I have opened up a summer reading thread on Ravelry in preparation for this show, and it already has some action going on. The reading I have planned for myself this summer includes two books. One is Chickens in the Road by Suzanne McMinn. It is in the memoir category, and I believe Suzanne McMinn has also had a very popular blog of the same name, so I think there's some overlap between what's in the book and what's on the blog. The other is a book that was recommended to me by Paula of Knitting Pipeline when I was mentioning something regarding Ruth Reichel. And she's, if you like to read things related to food, Ruth Reichel is definitely one of the go-tos. And so is, this is another book that I pulled from my shelf, but I didn't mention it in the talking I just did. MFK Fisher is also one of the greats in food writing. And I have her The Art of Eating, which is a compilation of a lot of smaller texts. So I'll list that in the show notes. The text that Paula suggested was a book called Home Cooking by Lori Colwin. And when I was in New York a couple weeks ago, I picked up this book at the Strand. I found a copy and I've already begun reading it and enjoying it very much. So I look forward to seeing what everyone else is going to be reading this summer and getting some good suggestions for my book list. I'd like to close the episode today by reading a short passage from Natalie Goldberg's Writing Down the Bones, and the subtitle of this book is Freeing the Writer Within. This is from a chapter called Go Further. And I don't think Natalie Goldberg's sentiments in this chapter are limited to the topic of writing. Push yourself beyond when you think you are done with what you have to say. Go a little further. Sometimes when you think you are done, it is just the edge of the beginning. Probably that's why we decide we're done. It's getting too scary. We are touching down on something real. It is beyond the point when you think you are done that often something strong comes out.
Acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Thanks for listening. Show notes for this episode can be found on my website, yarns@yinhu.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, I hope you will consider liking the show's Facebook page or leaving a rating or a review on iTunes. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow fire. Just like Linda Curtis, but I don't know why. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Nature's a will get you high till your face is smile. Jump a river naked, hike a country mile. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine. Nature. Thing.